reflection and the mirror's reflection. I'm a dancing with myself when there's no one else inside. In the crowd and lonely night, well, I wait so long for my love vibration, and I'm dancing with myself. Dancing with myself. Dancing with myself. When there's nothing to lose and there's nothing to prove, well, I'm dancing with myself.
I don't get the music selection, Jim. A, you hate Billy Idol. B, what does it have to do with getting beat by a badger?
Well, I struggled this week, but you are correct. I hate Billy Idol. I don't hate Billy Idol. I just hate his work, his music. I'm sure he's a nice guy. But you know, I was thinking about Dancing with Myself. Just when Kirk Ferentz looks in the mirror, I think he sees Wisconsin. I think that Wisconsin is everything that he thinks he's building towards at Iowa, but he never quite gets there. They always seem to beat him at his own game. So welcome to 12 Saturdays Post-Wisconsin Podcast. I am James Bladel.
And we're in missing man formation tonight. Bill Delahant, who actually made the road trip up 151 with me to Madison, is out with a work-related function, I guess you'd call it. So it's old school 12 Saturdays podcast, just me and Jimmy here.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to take care of that career and that until we start rolling in those fat stacks of podcast money. I'll let you know whenever that starts rolling in. But
I just presume you're just embezzling it all anyway.
Yes, it's like Scrooge McDuck over here. I just swim around in the vault of coins when you're not.
Yeah, so I don't know if we got a chance to talk to Bill, Jim, but we were in the neckbeard section of Camp Randall. Apparently, a lot of guys that didn't really feel like a prestigious University of Wisconsin alum, if you can feel what I'm putting down.
I thought you had to specify that you were in the non-neckbeard section when you bought your tickets. Isn't that pretty much all of Camp Randall? Yeah, it's... So what do they call? Oh, so we hear like Walmart Wolverines, we hear Tavern Hawks. What is the Wisconsin equivalent of the, whatever you call them?
Yeah, that's a good question, Jim. I don't know. I don't really have anything that springs to mind.
These are the guys that disappear on the day that deer hunting season opens.
There you go. Yeah. The Hunter Orange Badger, there I guess. Go.
Well. They probably could have left at halftime and not missed much because what a stinker. I mean, I know you and Bill, you know, it's good that you guys got up early and drove up there. And I know Madison's a good time, but man, usually you have to fly out to a bowl game to see a performance that bad.
Yeah, you're not kidding. Although, you know, the atmosphere in and around Madison would rival or beat pretty much any bowl game. So it's always a great road trip. It's a fun place. If you can't have a good time in Madison, you're not a fun person, I think. So everything but the second through fourth quarters of that game was an enjoyable trip. But boy, I haven't seen an Iowa team just get blasted on the line of scrimmage, both lines of scrimmage, yeah, actually, like that in a long, long time. And it was very disheartening. Worse in person, Jim.
I don't know how it could have been. I mean, you know, when you get the announcers and they're kind of talking about just menial things, just trying to kill time and fill airtime, and that's exactly what they were doing late in the third quarter, early fourth. They were just anything to talk about any subject that came to mind except for what was happening right in front of them. And I think, do you agree that it was the worst showing of an Iowa team since in the Ferentz era, or at least since that Arizona thing in 2004?
Maybe on the offensive side of the ball. I think the defense, I mean, they put Iowa in the position to win. You know, at one point it was 3 turnovers to 0, including a pick six. And, you know, when your defense comes out of the gate like that, sets a tone like that, That's really a game that you should be in at the very least, if not win outright, in my opinion.
Yeah, and by defense, you mean Josh Jackson.
Well, absolutely, but I mean, they were getting some pressure on Hornibrook, who might be the worst quarterback of a top 10 team I've ever seen in my life. I mean, the guys, Tommy Armstrong would have looked a little more solid behind the giant offensive line of Wisconsin than.
Oh, man. So I mean, just thinking about how bad it was. I mean, yeah, offensively, 60. What did they end up with? 66 or 68 yards.
66 yards, and the really disconcerting thing was the 0-for-13 on third down. And I just read in Land of 10 just tonight, and this makes me feel good because this is what I noticed too. I know some people didn't like Iowa's game plan, so they ran too much of first down. Iowa had something like 9 second and 6 or shorters. And they just couldn't get anything on second or third down, period. You know, those first down runs were popping at 4 or 5 yards a pop. You know, you want to take that. I don't know. It wasn't the game plan. Nobody blocked anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Why go away from that thing? If you're getting into second and six, I mean, you're actually on schedule, if not a little ahead. But historically, I mean, you know, we mentioned the 2004 debacle in the desert that we flew down for. Back then, and then we also I think I heard something about like there was something in the 70s, there was a game where Iowa turned in a worse performance, and then besides that, going back to I think they said that there was a game in the 40s when Iowa had something like less than 25 yards of offensive production. That was actually the worst. So this is the category that we're in now. We're talking about something that happened 40 years ago and something that happened like 70 years ago.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know what you do. You've got two freshmen playing tackle. They're trying out there. They look like good physical specimens. This is just going to have to be a game that you learn from, I think. Iowa has not solved that 3-4 defense that Wisconsin plays. From where we were sitting, we had a nice view right down the line of scrimmage. And often, Iowa guys weren't blocking anybody. I mean, guys were just running free because it was a blown assignment. They didn't know who to pick up with that. And that needs to be maybe the thing they focus on in the offseason if the coaches are looking. Because until such time that Iowa can generate some points against Wisconsin, they're not going to take them out of that West Division crown.
Yeah, well, what doesn't Nebraska run that, or who else runs that?
Yeah, Nebraska runs it as well. I don't think they have the quality of player that Wisconsin has. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and and from my perspective, you know, Wisconsin was not supposed to have that great of a defense, at least my understanding. It was all about their running game, and we were talking, I think, on the last podcast, let's make them one dimensional, and. That turns out that's the only dimension they needed.
Well, you know, Jim, I think their defense has been underrated for the last few years. I mean, they're usually up there statistically. They just don't get talked about that much, I guess. They don't really seem gaudy, but they're good at what they do. And I don't think you can have that run heavy of an offense if your defense isn't getting a lot of three and outs like Wisconsin does.
Yeah, meanwhile, you know, Stanley and his receivers look like they were not even playing the same sport, which is such a
lot
far
of drops.
Cry.
I mean, the few times they actually did block and there was time and Stanley got a good throw off, it was dropped. So, I mean, it was like, you know, I'm sick of saying the E word, so I'm not even going to say it. But, I mean, just plays weren't made.
Yeah. And it was such a contrast from the week before when it seemed like, you know, and we even said it, they like the guys were just playing outside of their minds, you know, and if Stanley would get the ball with even 5 yards, you know, within Fant or Hockenberg or Hawkinson, you know, he'd pick it up. And he was hitting guys, you know, in the hands. I mean, one throw to easily for a first down was a little behind, but still kind of hit him in the hands. You know, it was just nothing was going right. It was, and then watching from home, you're like, okay, well, you know, they had to get that drive out of their system. But now everything's going to, you know, and then you're like, well, okay, so they're 0-for-10 now on third downs. Eventually one of these, they're going to pick one up. And they didn't, and they just never did. And it was just, you kept waiting for it to click at least once. it just never came.
And you could feel it. Even the Badger fans were pretty apprehensive, especially with the turnovers. And you just felt like if Iowa could have hit one medium to big play, the whole atmosphere of the game would have turned. But they never could make it. To me, the actual play when the game was lost was when Fant dropped that, what looked like it was going to be a really nice catch. Mm-hmm. That was still a one-possession game at that time. Iowa's defense was still hanging in pretty tough. You know, you get down there, you score, who knows what happens. I mean, Wisconsin, clearly better team, legitimate top 10 team. So I'm taking absolutely nothing away from them. But I don't think the gulf in talent between the programs is as wide as that one particular game showed. It was one of those where things started to spiral out of control, I think.
Well, that's what Ferentz said too, right? He's like, you know, in the post game, something like, you know, a good team makes you look bad and makes you look worse than you are. And that's, you know, so, you know, his old saying about, well, you're never as bad or as good as you, you know, never as good as you look beating Ohio State, never as bad as you look losing to Wisconsin.
I'm curious about that though, Jim, is from the fan perspective. So that, you know, we've kind of talked about the player perspective. We talked about the coach perspective.
Neither of which we're qualified to offer, by the way.
But absolutely not. But we are qualified on this. We were on cloud nine last week. I mean, it felt great. You know, we're relevant. You know, we're back on the map. People in college football are looking at us, you know, all that stuff. That euphoria lasted a good few days. Yeah. How are you recovering from the disappointment the following week?
Hey, you know, it's not, I mean, the magnitude's not the same, but I don't know. I mean, it wasn't the losing of the game. I figured we had a solid chance to win, but we could have lost it. But it was just I think it was the nature of the loss and just the absolute ineffective showing, I think, bothered me more.
They looked non-competitive for most of the second half of the game, and you know, that's similar to the, like you kind of referenced earlier, that's kind of similar to what we've seen with the Bulls lately. You know, where you just don't look competitive with the team you're going up against, and that's very disappointing as a fan.
And Michigan State and Northwestern, I think, still, when you've got an offense that the best you can do after 60 minutes is 10 points, you know, that's a concern. But you know, you were talking about play of the game. Can you hear me? Sorry.
Yeah, I didn't know what happened. I thought maybe something attacked you, like a cat.
A cat attacked me.
Was I right?
Yes, my cat attacked me.
I could. Yeah.
He saw the cord from the damn headset, and he just went for the kill. I think the play of the game for me, the play that encapsulated the game, was that fumble. That bad snap, and where I don't understand it. It went right on, and then both Stanley and I think Wadley are laying on the ground in fetal positions, and somehow neither of them have the ball, and it just kind of squirts out behind him. I'm like,
yeah. I mean, that was cringe-inducing, especially when you're sitting surrounded by Badger fans like Bill and I were, and they're all just like laughing and mocking, and then, you know, your quarterback sucks, and it's like, I can't defend him on that one.
and then I think that also you were saying it was one possession. I think it was one possession. The one drive that they actually looked competent, where Stanley threw that bad pick, where the guy tipped it to himself and brought it down. I mean, because he actually had, I think, somebody open, and we, you know, strung a couple of first downs together for the first time all day, and just you just felt like, you know, that would have been it. You know, you turn something, even a field goal on that drive, and you feel like, okay, now things can maybe start to click. But no, it's just, I don't know, man.
Well, and our punting was bad. Our punt reception was bad again. Yep. I will never, ever understand why our punters aren't just catch the ball. Catch the ball.
Fair catch it
the
every
damn
time.
Ball. We had no field position that entire game either, which also hurt the offense going. I don't think you had the whole playbook all the time when you're backed up like that. Catch the ball.
Yeah, I mean, just what you stand on the, what do you stand on the what, the 10 or the 15?
Yeah, I mean, somewhere right there.
If it goes over your head, just stand there. Don't run. Don't just, you know, if it's coming at you, fair catch it. If it's going over your head, run away from it. And if it's short, run up to it. I mean, it's just, I mean, maybe we're oversimplifying it, but come on.
We're probably, can't be that hard.
We, yeah.
You just got to catch the ball.
You just got to catch
the anyhow.
Ball. We need to flush this. Man, we needed some kind of epic historical Niagara Falls.
Well, the problem is, you know, it was Wisconsin week. So it's like, a lot of cheese was consumed. You know, fortunately, quite a bit of spotted cow and other libations were following it up. So it should go.
Are you saying you got a plumbing problem you're worried about?
the let's just say it might need to be a double flusher.
All right. Well, let's give it two flushes here.
Well, our old friend of 12 Saturdays, our friend on Hawkeye Report, the I guess godfather of Hawkeye Report himself, Tom Cakert, is our guest this week. Tom, you know how I feel about the Wisconsin game being a native Madisonian. Tell me what happened and why I should still want to even be a Hawkeye fan.
Well, you should still be a Hawkeye fan, but Iowa basically kind of got the crap kicked out of them, for lack of a better term. You know, I've kind of used this analogy this week that Wisconsin's did to Iowa what they've done to several teams this year, which is kind of play them close, but you feel like they're dominating the game, but it's still close. And then in that third quarter and into the fourth quarter, it's like they hit you with a sledgehammer over and over again, and they just punish you. I mean, God, I'm looking at some of those. I was rewatched the game for some reason because I'm a glutton for punishment. And just watching, God, there was one play where Jake Gervais came up there, and it was down near the goal line, and the fullback came through. And I don't know how Jake walked away from that because he got demolished. He got crumpled.
Tom, that was we were literally sitting at the 10-yard line right where that play happened. And it looked like somebody shot him out of a cannon. Yep. And Gervais bodily flew 6 yards through the air on his back and landed in the end zone. I mean, I looked at Bill and I'm like, yeah, that's what we're supposed to do to people.
That's the bullies of the Big Ten. They are the bullies of the Big Ten. I mean, they just are. They just overpower you, and their defense is fantastic. And Iowa has not figured out how to run the football or really even pass the football very well against a 3-4 defense that Wisconsin runs. There were just, Tor, you were there. There just weren't any open receivers. I mean,
and I know I'm hogging the conversation. I'll give it back to you in a second. But that's what was so frustrating to me about people complaining about play calling. And, well, why didn't they do more play action passes and take shots deep? I mean, nobody blocked anybody on 90% of the plays. There was guys running free, guys missing their assignments. And then when they actually did try to block, they just got steamrolled over or knocked directly back into Stanley. You couldn't have called any downfield passing on most of those plays. It was a disaster.
Yeah, it was just it was bad. And obviously, you know, 66 yards. I mean, my friend Scott had to look back in his encyclopedia of all Iowa games, and the last time Iowa had anything less than 66 in a game was 1944 against Minnesota.
We were just talking about that, Tom. It's like, crazy. You know, you're really in rare air right now when you're talking about, I think, wasn't there something in the 70s, too, where we got something like
78 against Michigan. That was Rick Leach. If you're old enough, you'll remember Rick Leach, who went on to play baseball, play Major League Baseball. And
is he related to Jim from Davenport?
No relation, I don't think. But he was a really good football, baseball player at Michigan, and played in the majors. And he was the quarterback. It was Bo Schembechler team, and they had 69 yards that day. And then you guys all remember the 04 game, which was the previous Ferentz low of 100 yards against Arizona State. And the shutout in that game was saved by the great Walner Bellius running back a punt or a kickoff.
That's right. That game actually has lots of parallels because Jim and I were there, so two of the podcast partners, also around very aggressively jerky fans for a team that's kicking the crap out of your team.
Yeah, so it was like this like almost elderly couple, and the woman was the worst, Tori. The guy was like embarrassed. She was just the worst. Arizona.
Yeah, she was a hag.
She was a piece of work. But Tom, yeah, I mean, what was the feeling, you know, watching it, I mean, I was of course at home, and I was telling Tori, it felt like the announcers were just trying to kill time there late in the third, early fourth quarter. It was just talking about anything but the game. It was just becoming unwatchable.
Yeah, it was a tough watch after a while. I mean, the defense tried to keep them into it, and I think they just kind of wore down Wisconsin's just big physical.
13-3 and outs will do that.
Yeah, and they just it just seemed like Iowa couldn't get out of their own way, and it's this. Here's the concern if you're an Iowa fan, and I wrote about this earlier in the week, but you know. Their performance in the road games this year, and this is the stuff that'll drive Bill nuts because they're going to Nebraska in another week or so, that they've just played terrible in all three road games in conference play this year. They mm-hmm. just have. They've got a grand total of 2 offensive touchdowns in those games. They're averaging 1.78 yards per carry. They're averaging 46 yards on the ground in those games. It's just those numbers are frightening if you're an Iowa fan. Now, I'll say this. Michigan State, Northwestern, and Wisconsin, pretty good football teams. I mean, they're probably
also
9-3 at least, and Wisconsin may finish undefeated.
Right. Do you also, though, think that could be a bit of a function of youth as well? I mean, especially the offensive team is really young, and kind of reading between the lines from Ferentz's transcript today, he kind of, you know, hinted at the fact that, you know, the learning curve can be a little steep for young guys.
Yeah, they've just played. And the weird thing is, they played really well in Ames. That was a really hostile environment,
yeah.
Maybe the most hostile of all of them, and they put up 44 points that day. So you think, well, they're not going to be. And Iowa State has proven to be a pretty good defensive team this year. I think that's fair to say, too. And that's why it's just so weird that they've struggled so much when it comes to Big Ten games in terms of scoring points, driving the ball. I mean, they're averaging 10 first downs on the road a game, and you know, at home it's like almost 18, and you know, they're averaging 4.85 a carry in conference play in games at home. It's just a lot of this stuff. But they do seem, I don't know, Stanley seems a little more nervous when he's on the road, maybe. I don't
Absolutely.
Know.
I mean, I thought at the Wisconsin game he looked nervous.
Yeah, and Tom, I read your article, and I was struck as well. I mean, usually you expect to see some sort of a drop off or a differential between home and away, but it's stark between this
it's
year.
It's stunning. I was stunned when I was running those numbers. I was like, wow, this is way worse than I thought it was.
They're two different teams, and what it reminds me of is the away games that I've seen. You know, Northwestern, Michigan State, and Wisconsin remind me of the team that I saw in the spring game back in April, just hapless and lost, is you know how I described them to Tori and Bill, who weren't able to go to the spring game. And I, you know, it's almost like that comes back to haunt them. Now when they're in Kinnick, completely different persona. They actually look, you know, like world beaters 2 weeks ago. So where do you think this we go from here? I mean, we've got 2 games left. I'm hearing, you know, I mean, obviously we've got Purdue and Nebraska's runaway dump truck, but 66 yards of offense doesn't really beat anybody in this league. So where do you think, you know, what do you think which way the winds are blowing here?
Well, they could beat just about anybody with 66 yards of offense if teams are dumb enough to keep throwing at Josh Jackson.
That's the truth.
I think the word's getting out on that one.
Yeah, and by the way, Tom, what did you think of my DJK performance against Minnesota versus Jackson's
comparison
against Wisconsin?
Great comparison, because you know, Darrell was the only guy that showed up that day. There's no doubt about that. And that was a miserable day up in Minnesota, too. It was icy. That field was really icy. And
you know, cocaine is a hell of a drug, Tom.
Well, he should have shared then, because apparently nobody else was interested.
Speedballs for everybody in the locker room. Yeah, but that was a great comparison. But yeah, they're just it's for the last two games. I don't know. They've got to. I think they'll be okay this week. I do get concerned about the Nebraska game. Now it's probably almost assured that you know Nebraska's not going to make a bowl game now. So you know, I don't see Nebraska going up to Penn State to hammer down on those guys. Just, yeah. But they're going to be playing. How interested is Nebraska going to be in that game? Because their coach is going to get fired. You know, Bob Diaco will want them to do things, and he's now blaming tackling techniques for Nebraska defense.
I'm more worried about Purdue. I'm more worried about Purdue at home than Nebraska on their own.
They're a much better team, and it's pretty remarkable what they have done this year because, and it's more defensive than anything else. You know, they're dropped their average points given up per game by almost 20. And that's what's kept them. You look at their, you know, kind of all their games, they're not giving up 45 points a game like they were last year or the year before, where you could almost go into every game thinking, well, Iowa's going to score about 40 against Purdue and they'll never be able to keep up. That's not the case. They're going to be pretty good. I think their quarterback sets up well, though, for Iowa because he's kind of a statue and he likes, they're going to like to throw, but you know, you guys probably consulted the weather forecast already as I did. You know, 30-mile-an-hour winds, that's not good for a passing team. Yeah. Just not.
So they're fighting for...
Well, it's also not good for a rushing team like Iowa either. Yeah.
So they're fighting for... What are they looking for here?
They've got to win out. They have to win out to get to a bowl game.
So they're 4-6.
Which if they get to 6-6... And Brom's got to be coach of the year, I would think. I mean, gosh.
Well, they did lose. Blau. Blau.
Yeah. So they've got Sindelar's now. Elijah Sindelar. He's their quarterback.
They were running two quarterbacks most of the season, though, weren't they?
Yeah, Sindelar's. This will be. He started six games this year. Yeah. They've kind of moved in and out with him and Blau for a little bit. You know, this guy's got kind of a, you know, big arm and likes to throw it.
Threw for but 376 last week against a Northwestern. Only
the bug
only
of,
one
the
touchdown.
Bugaboo, yeah, the bugaboo with him, talking to one of our Purdue guys from Rivals today, they said the thing with him is he's just struggled to get it in the end zone. He's good from 20 to 20, but then he struggles, and that's like the perfect thing for Iowa because Iowa's bend but don't break. We'll let you go to the 20, but then we'll lock it down.
Well, I tell you what, I'd rather have teams only throw against Iowa. I mean, their pass defense has been superb and very opportunistic all season, and the run defense kind of comes and goes.
Yeah, and that's the key for Iowa is if they can stop the run and run the ball, they'll be in good shape. I think they're going to come. I just can't see Iowa going out and laying an egg on the senior day for Josie Jewell. Just can't see Josie allowing that to happen. And I think they'll have an Akram too, and those guys will. I just have a feeling they're going to play pretty well on Saturday, and not win comfortably, but win. Win by enough that you'll feel like, that was a good win. It's okay.
Well, that brings me to the point, and this is something Bill and I kind of talked about on our depressing ride back down 151. You know, let's say they do win out. That's an 8-4 regular season. So the last three seasons, they'll have gone 12-0, 8-4, 8-4. I think, you know, we've talked a lot that 8-4 should really kind of maybe for a program like Iowa be the bottom, you know, the floor, if you will, per season. So really, that's a pretty good 3-year run, right? And with things setting up pretty good, you think the natives are happy?
No, natives are never happy because that's the thing. If you peruse around, and I kind of go around to some of the different message boards and. For the most part, the teams that are kind of good in football, every one of those schools believes that their coach should be achieving national titles every year. And that's just kind of, I think Iowa fans want that. I think, you know.
Do they though, Tom? I mean, I'm just going to say this because I get into this argument with Tori a lot, and I don't feel that way. I feel like I would like to see us in contention for the West, you know, 3 years out of 5.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's very fair.
I'm not looking for playoffs. I'm not looking for national championships because so much has to happen that's outside of your control. But I'm looking for, you know, 9-10 wins with a couple of rebuilding years in between a good 2-3 year run. And then I'm looking for bowl wins. There's something that we haven't had in a while.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So that's when I bring that up, and I'm saying this as let's wear the label now as the pessimist. When I bring this up in the message board context, people are like, oh, so you want to be like Ohio State and Alabama? No, I don't. I want to be more like Wisconsin. I want to be more like Michigan State. I want to be more like Stanford, I guess. You know, I mean, if we're drawing comparisons. So
I think that's a totally, completely fair way to look at things because, anybody who there is a segment out there that believes Iowa should be Alabama. And I just don't think that's fair or, realistic. And, even good teams have down years. I mean, you look at Florida State's been one of the most consistent programs over the years. And, they're struggling this year. It just happens. But I think you're right. Wisconsin, Michigan State in the last maybe 5 years, minus last year, that's what Iowa should try to be. And Iowa hasn't been at the level of those two for that extended period of time. And
well, it's Wisconsin's consistency is what's so impressive. Cause Bill and I talked about this too. One thing most people don't realize is, Wisconsin in over 110 or whatever years of playing Big Ten football has never gone through a conference season undefeated. Iowa's done it twice under its current coach. So, I mean, the peaks are peaks for Iowa, there's no doubt, but the valleys suck. I mean, Wisconsin, though, is kind of like a Solich plus, right? Or a Bo Pelini plus. 9-3 or better every year. Sometimes 10, sometimes 11, maybe... Even better this year. Amazing consistency.
This will be their sixth appearance in the Big Ten Championship, and there's only been 8 of them. Is that correct? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's right.
And they were in two different divisions for a while. Remember, they were on the other side there before we split East and West. So, yeah, the consistency is I'll just come out and say it. It's enviable. It makes me kind of gnash my teeth with jealousy that they're pulling it off, because really what they are doing in many respects is they are building on and perfecting the system that Ferentz wants to implement.
And they have done it with different coaches too, which makes it even more impressive, but they understand who they are and they kind of don't deviate from who they are. For the most part, I think Anderson tried to do a little bit different, but for the most part, they're just going to go get these human silos to block people up front and get a good back and get a kind of a do no harm quarterback for the most part. Although I don't think Hornibrook's, I think he's more harm than do no harm.
Yeah, I think he is too. They should just put one of their backup running backs at quarterback.
I think he's probably going to end up costing them their chance.
He aspires to be a game manager is like the nicest way to put it.
Right? Really, absolutely.
That's exactly what he is. I mean, he's not good. And kept Iowa.
Most love Big Ten quarterbacks since Tommy Armstrong, would you say? By opposing defenses.
Tommy Armpunt, yeah. He's but yeah, that's the program, and there's no shame in saying that. I mean, you can talk envious, but that's what it is. It's you want that kind of consistency, but you look at Iowa, and I mean, you can go back to '79 when Hayden Fry came in, all the way to the current day. Iowa's a 7-5, 8-4 program, and those are two pretty good coaches, and that's what they've been able to achieve. Now, could somebody else come in and do better than that? Maybe. I won't discount that, but I'll also say, whenever anybody says, maybe you get somebody different than Kirk Ferentz in there, and my natural instinct is to say be careful what you wish for, because I was a bad hire from being what Purdue's been for the last decade.
Or I mean, maybe even not that bad. I mean, I think the big question is, if you make the change, what are you more likely to get? Closer to Wisconsin or closer to Minnesota? And yeah. Honestly, who could argue it's more than a 50-50 proposition?
Yeah, it's there's a risk there. And are you willing to take that risk to achieve something better? I understand why people get frustrated. You know, the old Ferentz fatigue thing that I always bring up.
Yeah, and as the token pessimist, I'll throw it out there again, and I think I put this on one of your boards today, is, I get it. Ferentz is basically, you know, he's there until he wants to leave. He's earned the right to stay until he wants to leave. Now, however, 7-5, 8-4 is good enough to keep him there until he gets tired of it. But that, to me, it's not good enough to just automatically hand it over to Brian.
Absolutely correct.
Brian has to show, I think, marked, measurable improvement from, you know, from where we are now until where it is whenever Kirk decides to step down, to make it obvious and compelling that Brian is the heir apparent. Because right now, I don't see it.
100% agree with you.
Me too. And I mean, I wrote that in my column this week, and I would actually put a specific on it. I'd say, if you don't see a West Division championship in the next 3 to 4 seasons, the time is past. I mean, if they want to make this a seamless transition, Ferentzian dynasty handover, they're going to have to sell it, and that's going to go through beating Wisconsin and winning that West Division. I don't want to see the continuation of being the second best team in the West Division. I mean, that's nice and all, but no.
Yeah, no miscongeniality, and it's got to be, like you said, Tori, I think the window is between now and 2020, which gives you 3 seasons, what's left of this one, plus 3 seasons to figure out how to get to Indy twice in those 3 seasons.
Yeah, and one of the things that I've kind of quietly thought this year with Brian, at least just based on, he had the thing at Michigan State where he, quote unquote, punched a wall up there and they thought he broke his hand. And then the outburst, up in the press box at the official, at the replay official, you just wonder if Brian is putting a ton of pressure on himself because he knows that this is his audition. It really is.
Right.
He's auditioning to be head coach. And he knows it, and everybody knows it. And if it doesn't go well, this is his dream job.
This is a lot of people's dream job, I think. And I think this is the clearest path for him. And he knows that, it's this or a long stint in the MAC to get a second shot at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, one of the criticisms that I think Kirk Ferentz has gotten over the years is being a little complacent and, not hungry enough. Well, I mean, here it is. You want to create a college football coaching dynasty at a school that you've, built up to be great. Here's your opportunity. But you got to put the W's on board. I mean, you got to. That's the name of the game.
Yeah, you got to win games, you got to win championships, you got to compete for championships and play at a high level. And that's the thing I worry about with Brian is, it's just natural human instinct.
Pressing, right? You're saying he might be pressing a little bit.
Yeah, just, he's trying too hard. Sometimes maybe being... I used to say it about Greg Davis. Yeah, just trying to go against his tendencies almost too much. And I thought maybe he did a little bit of that up at Wisconsin where, third and two, while just try and run the ball sometimes. And he's, trying to throw it and Stanley ends up getting sacked and he'll fumble or, make a mistake. And it doesn't end well sometimes when you try to be a little too against who you are. And I will say this about this year and running the football. I don't think we can underestimate the impact that losing both those tackles had on this team.
I agree.
I mean, it's just...
Well, and I'm going to say this, too, and I know this is going to be a controversial take. I don't think Akram Wadley is an every down Big Ten back. I mean, I think he is a Reggie Bush type. Why Iowa didn't pound Torrin Young once James Butler went out, I'll never understand. Because Iowa does best if they're going to run. They got to be thunder and lightning. And they always need a thumper. And they don't have one now. Or they won't use him.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, they've used they tried to do some of that with Butler's more of a straight ahead guy, and they tried to down against Wisconsin. I think that was kind of their solution to combating the 3-4 and trying to run stretch plays against it, was just find a guy that can go straight up at guys instead of Wadley, who might dance a little bit and wait, and the hole may never be there, and you end up with a 3-yard loss. So. Mm-hmm. I think that's what they were trying to do last week. Now, will they try it this week? I don't know. But it's, Wadley
will do better against Purdue, though, don't you think? I mean, he'll have more of those opportunities to get out into the open field.
You know, you would think that he would have done better against a 3-4, that there would have been a little bit more space to operate in. But, you know,
They didn't block.
They didn't know who to block, and then they didn't block. It didn't matter.
Yeah. Yep. Well, listen, let's, we could probably, gnash our teeth and rend our clothes talking about Wisconsin. But you're thinking that maybe, Purdue is good for what ails you. And as the non-basketball expert here, while we've got you, Tom, for a couple minutes, how are you looking at the basketball team this year?
They've been fun to watch. But, again, it's, the you might get better competition playing the pickup game at the YMCA than Chicago State and Alabama State. It's they're not good basketball teams. We will find out a whole heck of a lot more about the Iowa team next week when they go down to the Cayman Islands and play against Louisiana Lafayette and either North Dakota State or South Dakota State or Wyoming, and then probably if they make the championship, Cincinnati. That'll be, especially Cincinnati, will give us a better gauge of where this Iowa team's at. Really, the next couple weeks after this, last bye game, as they call them, just basically, Cupcake City with Grambling on Thursday, you've got those games down the Caymans. You've got Virginia Tech there, which is going to be a pretty good team. You've got the two Big Ten teams, Penn State and Indiana, and Iowa State. So you'll have a better gauge, I think, second week in December of where this Iowa team's at. But I like them. I think they're really good. I like the freshmen. I like the depth. I like they really seem to share the ball well, and it's a pretty good shooting team. Foul shooting is a concern. They're not shooting foul shots very well at all.
Now, Tom, you said something in one of your articles, something about Fran has a lot of mouths to feed in terms of minutes. And I'm asking both of you guys this because I'm not, Torrey will tell you, and I'll be the first to admit, I'm kind of more of a casual basketball fan. But is it possible to be, cursed with abundance when it comes to, your talent, and you've got to spread the floor around a little bit? Or is it just finding the right combination becomes, chasing all the possible combinations and permutations of lineups until you find the right one, and that could just take you, into the conference play before you figure that out?
I mean, I think their problem is a log jam at position. I mean, how many forwards do they have, Tom?
Yeah, and mind you, they haven't played with Nicholas Baer either, who's, their best three-man and a really productive player. But you've got, Garza, Cook, Pemsel, Kreener, on and on and on. Von Wagner, Nungy. You've got all these bodies that you got to kind of sort through. I think he's figuring things out a little bit about kind of a first and second unit, and they're able. I'll tell you what I really like. I really like the combo of Garza and Cook together. They have really meshed well. They seem to. You would think, naturally, the way both those guys play, maybe they might occupy the same space, but they seem to space really well, share the ball with each other really well, and feed off each other really well. So I'm really feeling good about that.
What about the reports of Cook expanding his game? He's not just a slasher and dunker now, or
Well, I'm still waiting to see that. Ahmad Wagner's shooting threes now, so we can see everything in this world. He banged in a three the other night. I'll wait and see what Cook can do, but in terms of stepping out to 15 feet, I think that's just, if he can make those shots, that's great. But you want Tyler Cook going to the glass and going to the bucket when he's got the ball and, you know, trying to make something or getting fouled and getting to the foul line and trying to cash in there. Ideally what you want from Tyler. He's really gotten a lot better this year. He's not trying to run through people, and I think he understands himself a little bit better now.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like you're cautiously optimistic as the season is about to get underway, and then of course we are
we should note though very quickly Jim, that Iowa State got completely housed by a pretty bad team.
Iowa State's bad this year,
and Iowa's gonna take care of Hilton Magic, right?
Well, yeah. I hope so, but I just can't. Boy, you know, I could completely see them, those guys rising up and giving Iowa, you know, just
giving them the old LeFester Rhodes treatment.
Yeah, some guy will go out, you know, that Weiler Babb or somebody or Donovan Jackson or, you know, one of those guys will just go out there and just go LeFester Rhodes on them and can't miss and end up losing. But we'll find out next week. I'm excited to see them play against some better teams next week. And if they go down to Cancun and beat Cincinnati in a championship game, then I'm gonna be really a believer in this team, because Cincinnati's really good.
You heading down there, Tom? You're gonna go down with the team?
I tried to figure out a way where I could go there and get to Lincoln to cover basketball, and it just, if it was gonna be, if Iowa-Nebraska was in Iowa City this year, I probably would have been able to pull it off. But just getting out to Omaha would have been a bear.
Yeah, makes sense. Well, we always love having you. Thank you very much for coming and talking, football, and of course, giving us a little bit of a preview of the basketball season. We love, of course, the community that you've built and that you very wisely and with an even hand shepherd all the villagers in versus like Solomon, you know, ruling over his rowdy people over there at HawkeyeReport.com. But if folks haven't checked out some of the articles there by Tom, by Tori, and some of the more witty message board posts by myself, we encourage you to go check that out at HawkeyeReport.com. And Tom, always a pleasure to have you, and we hope to have you on maybe one more time between Nebraska and whatever bowl game we end up in. We can chat a little bit about the season and look ahead to 2018.
Absolutely. Anytime you guys need me, you just let me know. I'll make time.
Thanks a lot, Tom. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thanks, awesome. Guys. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, bye.
Well, so we're back after saying goodbye to Tom. I love it when we can get Tom on, just because, you know, Hawkeye Report .com is a really big part of my life, especially after the game like Ohio State. Not so much this week, though. I've been very productive at work staying off Hawkeye Report. Yeah.
Well, I'm proud of you, though, for turning the corner, Jim, to, you know, giving yourself, like I suggested, that 24 to 36 hour cooling off period. It makes a big difference, doesn't it?
It does. But, you know, let me tell you the biggest difference, Tori, is you're always going to see me more frustrated when we lose a game like the Michigan State and the Northwestern games, where you lose by a possession versus just, you know, getting your hat handed to you like we did against Wisconsin. I mean, what, you know, you can't just point to one play or one call or one drive, you know, it was the right whole day. So, but I hear some rattling in the background. What did you switch to here?
I've got a McClellan's Highland single malt scotch. It's a knockoff of Macallan, but it costs about half as much.
Is it like a?
But it tastes really good. No, it's very nice.
Well, you know, we were talking earlier that can you tell our audience what your rule for wine selection is?
Oh yeah, you take the combination of their wine advocate score plus their Hy-Vee fuel savers point, and if they add up to over 120, that's going to be the best wine you can
exactly.
get.
Exactly. So whenever I see
it is science
whenever I see 25 cents a gallon, because you know you and I both drive pretty big trucks, so we're always just I'm just a whore for the fuel saver points. But we get to see 25 cents a gallon for a bottle of wine. I'm like, you know, maybe could be a little dicey, but if I drop back to 15, 20 cents, that's the sweet spot for me.
Yeah, that's where they're not quite trying to unload it. They're trying to lure you in to let you know it's good, right?
Exactly. So, no, for me, I'm doing the, I made myself a Roy Moore, which is Coke Zero and 16-year-old Jameson.
You need to put that on the internet.
That's it is now.
And Twitter. Yes, that's a tweet.
All right. Well,
and for those who I do professional business with, that will be Jim tweeting on the 12 Saturdays account.
We'll have to start marking our tweets with our initials. Leo, Bill's not here. Let's just blame everything over on Bill. So. But we got to wrap this one up.
Wait. We haven't given Bill access to the Twitter feed, have we?
Let's say we have.
Oh, shit.
But, you know, I was just saying, to wrap this up, we did mess up one thing, is that we didn't award the Gnome of Knowledge. And
I think the Gnome of Knowledge gets to live in Wisconsin with the bull, right? Well, I guess it's not even a real bull. They got its nuts cut off. You ever notice that it has no testicles, Jim?
I think it's really interesting how we play for a golden calf. I think there's a metaphor there.
I think there is. We're all going to hell.
But looking at the picks, first of all, we all suck. We all picked Iowa to win.
Bill did not pick Wisconsin to win.
No, we all
little
picked
pessimist
Iowa.
Bill.
Wow, he picked Iowa 17-14 with Noah Fant as his pick to click, which could have been
if he can catch.
I saw last minute heroics from Miguel Recinos, 24-21, and you picked Nate Stanley with a more comfortable 27-10. Let's just say we all blew it.
We sucked that up almost as much as they sucked up the game.
Yeah. So I think we're going to have to say that the winner of this week was none of the above, and the Gnome of Knowledge stays.
Prepared. We don't know any Badger bloggers we can mail it to, do we? Or podcasters, or
you know, I think from their perspective, it would look like some kind of weird prank that they got some sort of Hawkeye gnome for no reason.
Congratulations, you bastards!
Yeah, exactly. So, what are you thinking for this week? You got a pick for us?
I Purdue's got to be a slump buster, right? I mean, they had their nice little run where it looked like they were, you know, fairly coherent and pretty good. But now it's getting cold. Those injuries are mounting up. You know, the record's still kind of, nah, they're on the road. They're a slump buster, Jim. Mm-hmm. Iowa's going to once again make us just be flummoxed and perplexed. I'm going to call it 31-10 Hawkeyes. Akram Wadley runs wild.
Wow. Okay. We're going back to the, yes, we can pick Wadley again.
Well, yeah. I mean, a guy that rushes for, what do you get, 4 yards on Saturday?
Exactly. So we texted Bill to get his picks, but he's in some sort of corporate training, team building.
What if it's a cult, Jim?
It could
we
be.
Don't know.
We don't. It could be multi-level marketing. I think that's the politically correct word for cult.
I think you are correct. So, like,
I'm going to go Iowa as well. I don't think it's quite that good, although I do see a pretty comfortable win. I'm going to call it 27-13. And I'm going to go.
Ooh, that sounds like an Iowa Purdue score. Oh, I'm jealous.
It sounds like an Iowa November and Kinnick score.
Yeah, you know? I like that.
And you know what? You know, once is a mistake. Twice, you're an idiot. Three times, you're just. I'm going to pick Josh Jackson for my pick to click because nobody's picked him yet. So, you know, I figure I can't go wrong. If Purdue makes the mistake of throwing to the guy even once, he's
at some point, teams have to stop throwing at him.
But I will say,
we were laughing with the guys next to us because we kept yelling, run the 15 play again. run the 15, play again. That was like the only thing Iowa could do. It was like, please, Jesus, just let Hornibrook throw it at Josh Jackson one more time.
Well, and plus, you know, it's probably the last time we'll see him play in person. So I think, you know, he will cement.
I have a weird feeling he's going to be one of these surprise sticker runners.
But see, he already graduated. That I would say if he was still working on his degree, yes. But he's already graduated.
That is new information to me. I changed my previous pick.
I think he will have already graduated by May, so I don't see him sticking next year.
Well, we shall see.
Yeah, but you know, let's put the asterisk down that you run for 66 yards of offense against Purdue. That's good enough to lose to anybody in this league. That's good enough to lose to Illinois. But Purdue to me is one of those teams that. It's like Maryland or Indiana. They impress the hell out of you the first couple of weeks in September, and you think maybe they're not going to suck this year, and then by November you're like, no, you know, they actually do suck. So I do think we're going to get healthy, and we will tweet out Bill's picks whenever he deprograms himself from his current indoctrination and sends them over to us. So
we are still making him do the actual, like, editing, right?
Sure, I thought I was on the hook.
Oh, hell no, he's got to do something.
Yeah, he's got to earn his keep. He's got to earn absolutely. His gruel.
He's the third wheel of our bicycle of awesomeness.
Well, I'll just upload these into the Dropbox, and then we'll see if they get edited. And if they don't, then I'm on the hook. So, but yeah, I mean, you're going to be at the game, I presume.
We'll be there. I'm not sure who's coming with me yet. But it'll be me and someone.
So I'm taking my daughter. She really likes the games when they're cold. She does not like to go to the September games or even the October games for some reason. So
she's an odd duck.
She is. And I think my efforts to recruit her have failed. While you guys were in Madison, I was taking her on her second visit to a small private college, which unfortunately I think she has fallen in love with. So not going to be a Hawkeye legacy. So
yeah, but it'll be good.
Yeah, I think so. But she said they won't have a sports team that she cares about, so she'll always be a Hawkeye fan. So,
well, that's good.
Well, I've only been working on her since what, 2006? You remember when we took the kids, you know, back then we were taking the kids to these games, and now your daughter meets us up there at the bars, and my daughter goes up to in between college visits. It's crazy how fast that went.
If you break into Cats in the Cradle, no. That might be the last podcast we ever do.
That's
like jumping the shark.
It is, but we say that like people are listening. So, all right, well, let's bring this one home then for a landing, and hope we get healthy against Purdue, because as Ferentz says, you're never as bad as you look when you're losing. You're never as good as you look when you're beating the pants off Ohio State. And
we'll always have Ohio State, Jim.
You know, I think you're right. I think we will always remember this season for that game.
It's going to be, yeah, no, it's the duopoly now, right? It's Ohio State and Wisconsin, the yin and the yang, the soul of what it is to be a Hawkeye fan.
Yeah, it's like you're undefeated, but you get pantsed in the Rose Bowl. You know, it's kind of like it's kind of like those two poles. So, all right, well, looking forward to our final home game. Can't believe how quickly the season went, and we'll close by just saying, on Iowa.
Go Hawks! Beat Nebraska.
Beat Nebraska.